Chapter 13, Wickstown. Oblivious to what was transpiring in town with the rest of his officers, Chris Larrabee led the rest of the Mavericks' senior staff to the collection of tents and shanties that made up the infamous Wickstown. Before their arrival here, the chatter of the locals gave the captain some idea of what to expect. However, it didn't compare to seeing the place for himself. While unsavory images appeared in his mind when one spoke about bordellos and cat houses, Wicks had created a new distinction of sleaze in the establishment he ran in the middle of nowhere miles from Four Corners. To make matters worse, Chris wasn't entirely sure confronting Mr. Wicks was the best way to proceed. Still, if Picard's reports about Q were accurate, the entity enjoyed being involved in the mischief it created. Q would want a ringside seat to watch them dance to his tune. Since he was absent when Chris confronted Top Hat Bob and it was unlikely a serial killer would have an accomplice, Q had to be at Wicks's side. Chris disliked dealing with Mr. Wicks, who, from Buck and Mary's account, was little better than vermin. But with Julia dead, Chris wanted to end this whole affair as quickly as possible. There were so many customers in Wickstown, it was easy for five people to go unnoticed. The atmosphere was lively even in broad daylight, with half-clad women present through the open flap of every tent they passed. Mary stayed close to Chris, finding the whole concept rather odious even though such places still existed in the age they lived in. The ladies seemed neither unhappy nor sad. Their faces wore the look of resignation that this was their life, and they had accepted it. The lack of spirit in their eyes was more disturbing to Mary than the leering men who commanded their attention as if they were objects to be purchased. And they were.
"This is disgusting,"
Mary hissed under her breath when she saw a young girl, only 16, standing at the entrance to her tent. Her cheeks were reddened with too much rouge, with lips painted crimson to look so much older than she was. The girl smiled at JD, who swallowed visibly until she pulled down the sleeve of her dress and revealed an alabaster shoulder marred with a bruise.
"I don't know. I mean, they are providing a service."
"Attaboy Buck, show her your sensitive side,"
Vin commented, his hand poised above the mare's leg in its holster.
"This was the way things were back then. There were like 20 men to one woman. A man had to get some relief."
Chris slapped his hand over his face, wondering if it was possible to get away with shooting one's first officer in the mouth.
"Oh, really?"
Mary turned to Buck, her feminist outrage provoked as she stared at Buck with her fists clenched on her hips. The stance Chris knew well enough to be the universal position taken up by females about to go ballistic. "I'm sure he didn't mean it that way," Chris said, shooting Buck a murderous glare.
"Well, perhaps they should have used the tried and true method,"
the protocol officer snapped, her blue-gray eyes smoldering.
"Using Mrs. Palmer and her five daughters."
All four men gaped in shock hearing Mary use that rather old but very descriptive insult.
"Lieutenant Travis, that's extremely sexist."
"Buck, shut up."
"Yes, Buck," Chris said, rubbing the bridge of his nose. "Please, shut up."
"I don't get it."
JD looked at them, all confused.
"Mrs. Palmer? Let me explain,"
Buck said. "Later." Chris met the first officer's gaze and growled.
"Yes, sir."
Buck swallowed, noticing the captain's patience finally reaching its limits.
"Hey!"
Vin spoke suddenly, his voice urgent.
"Is that Wicks?"
They all shifted their attention to Wicks emerging from one of the tents with a rather battered young woman in his grip. Her physical state showed abuse, and Mary's stomach hollowed at the sight of the desolate expression on her face. Wicks did not seem worried about her condition, shoving her toward the ladies in his stable. They immediately surrounded their wounded comrade and spirited her away to another tent, most likely to deal with her injuries. The animosity they felt towards Mr. Wicks was apparent, even if they were powerless to do anything about it.
"That's him,"
Buck spoke through gritted teeth.
"That's the son of a bitch."
The first officer started towards Mr. Wicks, but Chris grabbed his arm and kept him from going further. "Stand down, Buck," Chris ordered.
"Yeah,"
Vin added his agreement. The helmsman's eyes were already scouring the immediate area, and he could see Wicks' men scattered strategically about the place.
"He's got people around him. You take a wrong step towards him, and they'll cut you down before you even get there."
"We have to reach him," Chris gestured for them to follow him into an empty tent. Judging by the rumpled sheets and the trunk in the corner, its owner would return soon, so they had little time to devise a plan.
"If we can get him alone, maybe we can use him to draw Q out.
Or at the very least, keep his men from blowing our heads off,"
Vin added.
"A good idea,"
Buck commented,
even if how this was to be done was vague.
So, how do we do that?
JD voiced Buck's unspoken thought. Chris hadn't thought that far ahead. However, he noticed Mary examining the contents of the worn trunk. After a moment, she lifted from the collection of slips and corsets a scandalously cut dress in red.
I have an idea.
She held the gown over herself. Chris's eyes widened.
Absolutely not.
Chris,
Mary said impatiently.
Somehow, I don't see anyone in our party fitting into this dress, and we don't have much choice.
Oh, I don't know.
Buck grinned.
Vin, with your hair.
I'll shoot you, Wilmington. Commanding officer or not.
Hey, will you two cut it out?
Mary, no. Chris snapped before facing the protocol officer. It's too dangerous. You saw what he did to that girl out there.
I did.
Mary nodded, not about to forget it for 1 minute.
But I don't intend to be alone with him long enough for that to happen, and I am going in armed. Once I get him alone, and under a gun, you three can come in and take it from there. It won't arouse any suspicion from his men.
That's true.
JD agreed with Mary's idea, even though he did not like to think of her in that position any more than Chris.
Don't encourage her.
Chris, you don't have a choice. We need to get out of here. We have obligations back on the Maverick, and I don't wish to die in this place the way Julia did.
Chris swore under his breath, not at all happy about Mary being the bait to Laura Wicks, but as captain, he had to forget she was more than just his protocol officer. He had to forget he cared for her and treat Mary like any other officer and resource under his command. It was more than just her life Chris had to consider, but all the other senior staff members because she was right. He was not allowing anyone else to die like Julia.
All right, he conceded.
Hating the idea but unable to deny they needed to escape this place before anyone else got killed.
We'll go with your plan.
Mary, he saw you.
Buck pointed out.
You can't convince him to do anything if he recognizes you.
That's true.
Mary had considered this. Picking up a black wig visible through the heap of clothing, she slipped it over her blonde locks and looked at Chris.
I think it suits me, don't you?
Wicks thought he knew every woman who worked for him. He made it his business to personally assess their qualifications. Most of them did not mind the task, and it was those Wicks hired for the simple reason of money. While others, the ones who had come off the farm with no family and no other choice but to resort to whoring for money, were the treats. He liked their delusions of doing the work just long enough to earn money to take them to a new life, unaware they were indenturing themselves to him until it was too late. Those who ran paid the price, for Wicks knew there was plenty more where they came from. Mary saw Wicks as she walked up the path between the tents. He was talking to a customer at the table outside a tent saloon, with a girl on his lap. She prayed inwardly that Chris and the others were watching her because she felt nothing but revulsion for the man she had to pretend to seduce. He was a fat, bloated specimen with a goatee and a dusty old suit intended to make him look respectable, but there was no mistaking the menace he exuded. Mary turned heads the minute she stepped out in the open with her heavily made-up face, her wig, and the dress pulled so tightly across the bosom and the waist, it left nothing to the imagination. She noted with some amusement the desire on Chris's face when he surveyed her form, even though he tried to hide it. Mary wondered if all men harbored secret fantasies about seeing the women they loved in such apparel. Men started hooting and whistling at her as she continued walking, hoping she looked nothing like the woman Wicks tried to accost earlier that day. She gave alluring smiles to those who propositioned her, keeping her eyes fixed on Wicks, who had noticed her. Mary could tell by the expression in his eyes that desire and lust allowed him to be taken in by her disguise. She ignored the crude offers and kept her gaze fixed upon Wicks, so he would know he was all she was interested in. This did not differ from any negotiation she undertook in her career as a Starfleet diplomat. It was all in the eye contact and first impressions.
Mr. Wicks.
Mary planted herself in the chair across Wicks' table when she finally reached the man.
Sally, honey.
Wicks stared at the young woman on his lap and gestured at her to leave. It was not a request. The young woman lifted herself off Wicks, and Mary had the distinct impression she was happy to go. When they were finally alone, Wicks regarded Mary once again.
Now, what can I do for you, little lady?
It's not what you can do for me, Mr. Wicks. It's what I can do for you.
Really?
One eyebrow arched, even though they were both aware of what she was referring to.
And what would that be?
All the pleasure you or your clientele may desire. I do everything and anything.
Now that is mighty interesting.
Wicks leaned forward, enjoying his view, when he peered down her dress.
Tell me a little about yourself, miss.
Delilah. That's all the name I need. I was traveling in these parts with a gent, but he looks to have left me in a bind. I need money, and I heard you could help a girl with my talents.
I may.
Wix's grin seemed broader, and once again, Mary felt that flush of disgust wash through her.
It depends on how good you are.
Well,
Mary braced herself and reached for his hand. She lifted one digit to her lips and sucked the finger with slow, languid flicks of her tongue. He tasted a Vashon booze, and Mary surprised herself by not gagging. She saw Wix respond to her ministrations and appeared taken in by her act, or at least putting up an extremely good show of it. Unfortunately, there would be no way to know for sure until they were alone in his tent.
Maybe we can go somewhere and talk about this some more?
I think that can be arranged.
Wix smiled and immediately pushed himself off his chair.
Come with me, darling, and we can talk about your qualifications.
Mary followed Wix back to his tent, located further from where she caught his eye. As she moves through the meandering path through the ragtag collections of tents, she tried to spy if Chris and the others were about. However, with so many people around, it was almost impossible to distinguish their faces through the crowd. Mary hoped they were indeed there because she had no intention of getting more personal with Wix than she had already. As it was, it would take a week to wash the taste of him from her lips. Wix himself gave no sign he suspected a ruse, and Mary hoped she could maintain the charade for just a little longer until it was time to spring their trap. Despite the reassuring knowledge Chris and the others were keeping a close eye on her as she followed Wix back to his tent, she could not help feeling a little apprehensive about being alone with this man. Mary saw the girl who emerged earlier with those terrible injuries to her face and knew her wounds ran deeper than the ones on her skin. Her stomach hollowed in disgust, and she was glad for the weapon strapped to the inside of her thigh. Wick's private tent did not look very different from the one she had been in when she liberated her present costume, but it had a proper bed, unlike the fold-up cots she spied in the others. She supposed being the master of this place allowed him such luxuries. She noted a few pieces of furniture but nothing to show he had any real attachment to it. Mary hid her anxiousness as she saw Wix go to the table next to the bed and pour them both glasses of whiskey from the bottle he had laid there.
Here we are, Miss Delilah.
He turned around and handed her a glass. Mary was just about to reach for it when suddenly he splashed the drink in her face before she knew what was happening. The liquid stung her eyes and made her recoil, robbing her of her vision long enough for him to throw a bald fist into her face. Mary felt knuckles against her cheek and tumbled back into the bed, uttering a small cry of pain as her body sunk into the mattress. Through the wave of dizziness, she heard Wix hissing.
You stupid bitch! You take me for a fool? I know you're Larrabee's whore!
Mary was not listening. Her hand fumbled beneath her dress, trying desperately to reach the gun strapped to her thigh, but Wix quickly pinned her down under his weight. His hand slipped between the folds of her dress, trying to get the gun first. Mary struggled to keep him from it, but Wix grasped the weapon. Before he could aim it at her, she threw a kick that knocked the gun out of his hand. It tumbled to the ground, beyond both their reach.
Whore!
He screamed, enraged, and struck her again, connecting with her jawline. Mary felt a surge of rage overtaking her, and she snapped her head back and glared at him. Staring him full in the face, she calmed herself and spoke in a low voice.
I have had just enough of you.
Mustering every ounce of strength she could, Mary twisted her body hard. Her momentum allowed her to dislodge him, and Wix rolled onto the mattress next to her. Mary did not waste any time and flipped onto her feet from the bed. Wiping the blood from her lip, Mary threw one controlled punch at Wix as he sat up. The blow caught him in the jaw, and his face reddened at her audacity to strike him. Mary did not care. She threw a series of blows to his face and some to his thick gut, which had little or no muscle control. His arms were flailing as he tried to fight back in his sitting position. Her attack kept him from standing up or rushing at her with brute force. When she sighted the gun, Mary dove for the weapon just as Wix stood up from his bed and charged.
I'll kill you!
She dropped to her knees, allowing his forward momentum to topple him over her body. She heard his outraged howl just as he crumpled in a messy heap but ignored it as she wrapped her hand around her gun and took aim. Wix growled loudly, snarling like an animal about to tear its prey to pieces. Although Mary had the gun, she was terrified and reacted without thinking. The first bullet exploded out of the barrel and struck him in the knee, correcting her aim in time to pull the trigger again. Mary fired.
This time, the bullet slammed into his gut. Wick screamed from the agony of a stomach wound and shattered knee, dropping to his haunches. Mary fired again. She pulled the trigger, again and again, watching him dance in pain as the bullets tore through his body. It was only when she heard the loud click of an empty chamber and the frantic sounds of approaching voices did Mary regain her senses. Wick uttered no more sounds after the third bullet. By the time she emptied the entire chamber into his body, he was soaked in blood. It was flowing freely, oozing through his clothes and saturating the dirt. For a few seconds, Mary did not know what to do. Her hands shook, and her stomach heaved so violently she thought she might retch. Mary had never killed another creature in her life. Even though Wix was a genuinely disgusting specimen, given life when he should have remained an aspect of fiction, Mary regretted being forced to kill him. Standing up shakily, Mary approached the tent flap, emerging into the sunlight just to feel a hand clenching around her arm and dragging her out the rest of the way.
"What have you done?"
Wix's bodyguard demanded.
"Let me go."
Mary protested weakly and saw a crowd had formed, demanding retribution for what she had done.
"She killed Wix, you bitch!"
Her captor swore and raised his gun to fire. A single gunshot erupted to stop him while silencing the rumblings around the place. Mary looked up and saw Chris aiming his peacemaker at the man intending her harm. As she surveyed the rest of the compound, Vin, Buck, and JD took up similar positions shadowing Wix's men. From where they were, anyone who attempted to shoot her or fire at them would have reason to regret it. "Let her go," Chris Larrabee's icy voice demanded as he glared at the man holding her.
"She killed our boss. She has got to pay."
"Judging by the bruises on the lady's face, it looks like self-defense to me,"
Buck pointed out.
"She had a gun."
Chris could see it would take just a little more convincing. This suited Chris fine because he could be very persuasive when he chose to be.
"I have a gun, and I'll shoot you just as dead as your boss if you don't take your hands off her now."
Just for effect, Chris cocked his gun and narrowed his gaze as he sharpened his aim on the target. Mary saw her captor swallowing hard. There were beads of sweat on his forehead as he tried to gauge whether Chris would actually fire. It was not long before the infamous Larrabee glare won out, and he reluctantly released her. She let out a sigh of relief and walked shakily toward Chris.
"Q," Chris shouted. "We're done playing your game."
"What are you talking about?"
Wix's bodyguard stared at him, bewildered. Chris ignored him, sure the omnipotent entity was hiding in the crowd somewhere. Seeing the blood on Mary's face enraged him as if he wasn't already furious because of Julia Pemberton.
"Do you hear me, you son of a bitch? We're through playing your puppets. We will not play your game anymore. It's over."
Suddenly, the face of Wix's bodyguard changed into someone completely different. Q stared at Chris with a decidedly amused expression before remarking with a smile.
"Well, to tell you the truth, Captain Larrabee, it hasn't been my game you've been playing."
Chapter 14. Playmates.
"You're Q?"
Mary swung around to face the being who, only seconds ago, was a bodyguard to the repulsive Mr. Wix.
"My reputation precedes me."
Q smiled as she approached him.
"Has Jean-Luc regaled you with stories of my exploits? Do tell, please. I'm dying to know if I make good theater."
"Good theater?"
Mary burst out in outrage.
"After what you put us through?"
"Mary,"
Chris broke through the crowd, who had forgotten all about Wix's murder and was more interested in the bizarre goings-on taking place before them. While he shared her anger at the entity who finally deigned to show itself, he was under no illusions as to just how dangerous Q could be. This was a being who could turn them all into amoebas if he should so decide.
"Let me do the talking."
"Yes, my dear,"
Q agreed with gusto.
"Let the captain do the talking. After all, you're merely the token love interest. Did you not know that, Blondie?"
His triumphant smirk almost made Mary forget herself because she really wanted to wipe that smug grin off his face.
"Still,"
Q continued, immensely enjoying the discomfort and confusion of those around him.
"We do need to talk, so let us dispense with the audience."
Snapping his fingers, the crowd disappeared, leaving Wickstown deserted with the senior staff of the Maverick, the only inhabitants of the infamous Bordello town.
"Wow!"
JD exclaimed in awe as he saw everyone disappearing with a flash of light. This was the most fantastic thing he had seen since coming on board the Maverick, and despite the seriousness of the situation, he could not hide his wonder.
"Now, there's a lad who enjoys a good show.
Q appeared at his side in a blink of an eye.
I had no idea they recruited so young out of the academy. Why, compared to me, you're not even primordial ooze.
Omnipotent and charming.
Buck came to JD's rescue when he saw his young charge frown with annoyance at the remark. Q turned his attention to the first officer and vanished suddenly. Appearing next to Buck, not as himself but as a rather curvaceous blonde siren with ample curves filling out a scanty dress. At the same time, she puckered her red lips at him with invitation.
Is this better, Buck?
Don't flatter yourself.
Buck said with a scowl that only drew laughter from Q, who reverted to his original form.
But we're not all here, are we?
Q turned his attention to the captain once more. You saw to that, Chris responded, feeling his anger bubble, thinking about Julia and the anguish in Ezra's eyes. You brought us here. Care to tell us why?
Once again, I am blamed for everything. I am not responsible for this, you know.
Oh, really?
Mary glared at him, arms folded in disbelief.
You know someone else who could transplant us into this place?
This place seemed to suit you when it was all fun and games with the odds stacked in your favor. Come on, Chris.
Q eyed Chris with reproach.
That's not what you're about. You always impressed me because you were fun, unlike stodgy old Jean-Luc. You knew how to let your hair down, something else Jean-Luc is truly incapable of doing.
Chris scowled, not liking his assessment of Jean-Luc Picard, who was a hero to Chris.
The fun vanished when we found that one of us was dead.
Oh, that.
Q sighed as if he had forgotten entirely about Julia. His obliviousness to it all infuriated Chris to no end.
That was unfortunate, but your species dies all the time. One more in the here and now doesn't really matter all that much, does it?
It matters to us.
Vin bit back angrily.
You had no right to place her in that situation. No one deserved to die that way.
Q regarded the Vulcan for the first time.
Why, you're rather hot-blooded for a Vulcan, aren't you?
He turned to Chris with a nasty smile.
Watch out when that pawn far hits. He's going to be a real charmer with the ladies.
Knock it off,
Chris snapped, his patience finally reaching its limits.
You brought us here and made us dance to your tune. What the hell do you really want?
Little old me.
Q held his chest as if wounded by the accusation.
I see delightful banter is not your forte, so I will get to the point.
Please do.
I am not responsible for your little trip here.
You said that already.
Buck reminded.
You'll forgive us if we don't trip over ourselves believing you.
Go on.
Chris said abruptly, signaling Buck to be silent because he sensed some truth to Q's words. All the reports he read on the entity made one thing clear. As annoying and dangerous as Q might be, he was not a liar.
You like me?
Q realized and beamed brightly.
You do!
Chris did not know why or how, but he did. If it were not for his dead chief engineer, the entire situation might have been amusing and Q, though annoying, was one of those personalities one could not help liking, even if he was to be taken in small doses.
I'm as shocked as you, so get on with it.
We're going to be lifelong pals.
Q appeared at his side and threw an arm over his shoulder.
Oh God, please, just get to the point.
Don't worry.
Q grinned at her.
You'll still get to bring us pork rinds and beer during Monday night football.
Monday night what?
JD asked.
All right. Everybody shut up.
Giving no one a chance to say anything else, Chris yanked Q's arm and pulled him aside.
What the hell is going on?
Oh, all right.
Q sighed, exaggerating his distress at being called out.
Since you feel the need to be so antagonistic, I'll put you out of your misery, but only because we're friends.
Thank you.
Chris answered sarcastically.
But first, we all need to be here.
Q snapped his fingers again. Out of thin air, Ezra, Josiah, Nathan, and Alex appeared on the scene. All four were understandably confused when they saw the captain and their friends around them.
What the hell?
Alex asked once she realized someone had transported them away from Four Corners.
For those tuning in,
Buck informed the new arrivals.
That's Q.
That's Q.
Nathan looked at the man taking center stage and enjoying it. He certainly did not look like an alien entity capable of causing so much mischief. Josiah was more concerned with how Ezra was going to take this introduction. After what the counselor saw the security chief do to Silas Poplar, it was safe to say Ezra was not in a reasonable state of mind. Confirming Josiah's worst fears, Ezra turned sharply to Q with eyes blazing.
Q? You're Q?
I must be the subject of conversation everywhere. Jean-Luc is truly wasted as a starship captain. I should employ him as my press agent.
Without saying another word, Ezra launched himself at Q and would have reached the entity if Vin did not intercept the security chief first.
Ezra, get a hold of yourself.
With his Vulcan strength, he was more than capable of preventing Ezra from doing anything that would get him killed, which a powerful creature like Q was more than capable of doing in retaliation for any attack.
Get a hold of yourself?
Ezra glared at Vin with incredulity. He stopped fighting to get through the Vulcan because Vin was more than capable of keeping Ezra pinned if he got it into his mind to do so. However, it did not lessen the rage Ezra felt towards the creature who brought them to this place and put Julia in the hands of Silas Poplar.
That son of a bitch killed Julia.
Sticks and stones.
Q shrugged as if Ezra's words were nothing before turning to Chris.
I see I will get nowhere with you people until I sort this minor matter out.
Without elaborating, Q snapped his fingers once more. And Julia was standing before them. There was no evidence of the beating that took her life. She was no longer in the period costume of the day but in her chief engineer's uniform, and she was most definitely alive. She stared at them, appearing as if she had awakened from a terrible dream.
Julia.
Mary gasped.
What happened?
Julia asked, confused. Her throat was terribly dry, and she yearned for a drink of water.
I remember Poplar hitting me before everything went black.
Julia.
Ezra broke free from Ben's distracted hold and took a step towards her, his heart flooding with such profound joy and relief he could not manage any more than that. He had not realized how much he loved her until he lost her and was never more grateful for anything than finding Julia alive again.
Ezra.
Julia broke into a smile, remembering how frightened she had been when Poplar was doing his worst. At that last moment, when she thought she was going to die, she understood their enmity was foolishness. Nothing ought to matter if Julia truly loved him. And she did. The engineer crossed the space between them before she knew her legs were moving. Julia felt lighter than air when she felt Ezra's arms around her body, pulling her close.
I love you.
He whispered as he held her in his embrace, almost terrified to let her go because the memory of that broken body in the street was still fresh in his mind.
Whatever has come between us, I am sorry. I should have known, and I swear I will never hurt you again.
No.
She shook her head as she looked into his face and saw tears of happiness running down his cheeks, not entirely understanding them but confident that he loved her.
It wasn't your fault. You couldn't have known it wasn't me. I shouldn't have behaved the way I did.
Neither should I.
Ezra replied, prepared to admit anything because he was so happy she was back with him.
I am sorry for what I did.
No, I am.
Julia responded. Neither cared they had an audience until Q began making retching noises.
Oh, you humans and your cheap sentimentality.
Considering it was you who caused this sentimental reunion.
Ezra pulled away from Julia long enough to reply.
I think you can endure it for a moment.
I.
Q returned automatically.
I had nothing to do with this.
So you said, Chris answered, returning to the matter at hand. However, he had to admit that his anger diminished following Julia's resurrection. The warm reunion between Julia and Ezra softened his disposition towards Q somewhat. Besides, he was starting to believe Q was telling the truth about not having anything to do with their being here, which only begged the question. Who did?
Mind telling us who is responsible for this if it wasn't you?
Since you asked so nicely,
Q bowed slightly before glancing at Mary.
I believe you know him, Blondie.
Call me that one more time.
Mary warned when suddenly another flash materialized Billy in front of her.
Billy.
Billy immediately turned to his mother and started towards her, bounding across the distance, more than happy to let her hug him when they finally reached each other.
What is he doing here?
Chris demanded, getting angry again. What game did Q think he was playing by accusing Billy of this entire situation?
Now, Christopher.
Q replied, utterly aware of the rising anger inside the human before him.
Before you go getting upset again, I must confess young Master Billy was not exactly alone in this escapade. He had help.
Two more figures appeared amongst them, and Chris was fast reaching the point where only a good stiff drink would kill the headache forming inside his skull. The new arrivals this time were a woman and another child. Both wore Starfleet uniforms with captain's pips on their collars. The woman was tall, with a mane of fiery red hair, and had the look of one of those old Celtic maidens from the Scottish Highlands. While the boy had light blonde hair and a rather somber expression.
Q,
the woman said, folding her arms impatiently.
Will you please get on with this? Quinn has spent altogether too much time in the company of these humans. It's time for him to get to bed. As it is, he is learning too many bad habits from that child.
She directed her disapproving stare at Billy, which immediately incensed Mary.
My son has no bad habits.
Well, Quinn certainly did not conjure up this entire fiasco alone.
Miss Q returned sharply.
Wait a minute.
Buck cut in.
Are you saying that kid was responsible for all of this?
Partially responsible.
Miss Q pointed out.
Your protocol officer's son filled his head with silly notions about cowboys, and the rest, as they say, is history.
But you said I could find someone to play with.
Quinn whined.
Well, you were certainly not playing when I found you.
The boy's mother interrupted.
They were fighting.
It was his fault.
Both boys pointed at each other.
Explain, Billy.
Mary made her son look at her. Billy swallowed and looked at his audience nervously before regarding the bruises on his mother, deciding he was just happy she was not dead or injured any worse than she already was.
We were playing. Quinn asked me what I like to do, and I told him about Buck's program. He said it was like a holodeck, that no one could get hurt, but when something bad happened to Julia, I tried to make him stop, but he wouldn't.
So that gave you leave to hit my son?
Miss Q asked sharply.
Considering what he was doing,
Mary came quickly to her son's defense.
It's something you ought to do to give him some discipline.
My son is a member of the Q Continuum. He is a special child.
I'm the only child. It's lonely.
Everyone fell silent and looked at him as he went to Billy.
I thought you were my friend. I thought we were having a good time. We were having a good time.
Billy replied, appreciating how Quinn felt all too well.
But I don't want to see anyone getting hurt. You killed Julia.
What?
Julia exclaimed.
We'll explain later.
Ezra said quietly, allowing the conversation between the two boys to continue.
She would have been better. I would have made her better. I didn't know that. When we die, we don't come back.
Q approached his son and lifted the boy into his arms.
Quinn?
The entity's voice was now devoid of sarcasm and filled with tender affection.
Humans are very different from what we are. The little Vulcan is correct when their life ceases. It simply does. It is not to be toyed with by us, but should be extinguished in its own time according to its own destiny. We are forever. That's what being omnipotent and immortal is all about. That's why we must be very careful when dealing with humans.
I didn't understand.
Quinn whispered.
I only wanted a friend to play with. We can play.
Billy quickly spoke up, finally realizing why Quinn had been so obtuse about what he had been trying to tell him. How does one explain death to a being who never has to fear it? He was a kid, and he had trouble understanding it, let alone trying to explain it to someone else.
We just gotta be a little more careful.
I don't know, Billy.
Mary was dubious about this friendship. After all the damage caused already, she did not know whether it was wise to let it continue.
I agree.
Miss Q responded, sharing Mary's doubt.
This human child is rather fragile, and who knows what other bad habits Quinn may pick up.
Hey, my child isn't the one who can turn the universe upside down with a snap of his fingers,
Mary said hotly.
Which simply proves his inferiority.
Ladies. Chris barked, silencing them both. Let's get a grip here. Personally, I can't tell either of you what to do, but Mary, we can't always pick our kids' friends for them, and Billy's smart enough to know what's right and wrong, don't you?
The captain glanced at the young boy with a little smile. At both young boys, actually. As much of a mess as this situation had become, Chris could not deny he could understand loneliness, and sometimes the best friendships came from the ones born out of adversity. Mary let out a sigh and looked at her son.
Is that what you want, Billy?
Yes, mother.
He nodded, giving Chris and Quinn a smile. Quinn stared at his mother with a pleasured grin, disarming the Q female considerably.
I am assuming, of course, Chris looked at Q, that you will teach your son how to deal with humans?
My son is omnipotent,
Miss Q said proudly.
I am certain he will have no trouble keeping his playmate safe.
Hell, this has been one seriously weird day,
Buck exclaimed.
No kidding.
Vin agreed, and it was a sentiment shared by everyone present. Chris took a step towards Quinn, unable to be angry at the child who reminded him so much of another it almost hurt. Dropping to his knees to look Quinn in the eye, Chris took a deep breath and responded.
Next time you want to play cowboys, ask first.
Really?
Really.
Chris nodded and then looked at Vin and the others.
I think we can accommodate the young man, can't we?
Ezra did not answer at first, but,
upon examining his feelings, found he could not hold a grudge with Julia returned to him, and things between them were right again.
I suppose so, assuming he does not fling us into the Andromeda Galaxy by mistake.
Well, it was sort of fun when people weren't dying.
JD agreed.
Speak for yourself.
Alex reiterated her dislike for the program.
Alex, it will grow on you.
Vin tried to convince her otherwise and garnered a dark glare for his efforts.
You hope.
Nathan chuckled dubiously. Chris noted Q was staring at him.
You surprise me, Captain.
This time Q regarded him with no trace of the impish smirk or mischief-making persona but with a thoughtful expression of someone seeing Chris in a new light. Chris's brow shot up. How so?
I didn't think you were so accommodating.
Q remarked, impressed by the kindness shown by this human to his son. Jean-Luc was usually so adversarial, and poor Kathy trapped in the Delta Quadrant was always cautious, but he could tell Chris was not so close-minded. I had a son once. I wouldn't like him to be lonely any more than you like your son being isolated.
Your son, I remember. The one who was murdered with your wife.
Chris's eyes widened as he stared at Q. What? What did you say?
Consider this revelation, my thanks.
Q replied as he prepared to send all these humans back to their ship.
The Magellan's destruction was no accident. Someone made that happen.
Someone? A snap of Q's fingers left the question unanswered. Chris blinked as the bright light dissipated out of his eyes, and he found himself on the bridge of the Maverick. He was in his command chair, wearing his uniform, with no trace of the black garments he wore in the Magnificent Seven simulation Quinn created. Everyone was back on the bridge and in uniform, looking bewildered at their abrupt return to reality. Then, Chris found voice enough to speak once the shock of returning to his bridge faded from his mind. What's our heading? Vin blinked, shaking away his disorientation before studying his console screen. His brow furrowed at the readings, and his confusion showed when he looked at Chris.
We're still on course for Antaria, at our exact position when we disappeared off the bridge.
Captain, I've just checked in with a subspace beacon. We're at the same point in time as when we left. According to the ship's chronometers and computer bio readings, we were never off the ship.
How is that possible?
Mary exclaimed, shocked. There was no trace of the bruises left by Mr. Wicks on her face. That at least gave Chris some comfort. Nothing else did.
Easy enough when dealing with an omnipotent being who can bring the dead back and create an entire world from fiction.
Josiah pointed out. Yeah, Chris nodded as Q's last words returned to haunt him. Easy enough. Epilogue. Spike. Captain's log, stardate 16.25.02. It has been a day since our return from the strange reality fashioned by Quinn to mirror the world of the Magnificent Seven. As far as the ship was concerned, none of the crew involved in the incident registered as having left. In the meantime, we have arrived at Antaria as scheduled. Lieutenant Travis is taking care of the preliminary steps to begin the treaty negotiations between the two opposing factions. I will join her on the surface when the actual work of diplomacy begins. The Maverick is now orbiting the Antarian homeworld, and I have left Commander Wilmington in temporary command of the bridge. For those who remember, the past day has left profound effects on us, even if no one remembers we were gone. The sudden reconciliation of Commander Standish and Lieutenant Pemberton will undoubtedly mystify those aware of the couple's troubles. Both have requested some personal time, and since there is no immediate urgency requiring them at their posts, I have granted it. After what they went through, they deserve the time alone. For myself, the implications of Q's revelation prey heavily on my mind. Was he toying with me? Or did he really believe the truth was a kindness? I can't say for sure, but he has planted a seed in my mind I cannot ignore. Whatever the cost, I must follow it to the end. I have to know if Sarah and Adam were really murdered.
Chris did not know how long he stared into space when the door of his ready room chimed. However, the sound took a few seconds to penetrate his consciousness before he finally recovered enough to utter a weak welcome to whoever was waiting on the other side. The door opened, and Buck Wilmington walked into the room, pausing a foot away from this desk, watching him closely. Chris noted his expression and felt immediately guilty even though he was uncertain why. Perhaps it was the collection of data pads on his desk, the uneaten lunch Casey brought him some hours ago, or the darkness in his eyes since their return. Buck could not say exactly, but he knew something was terribly wrong. It reminded him too much of the look in Chris's eyes after Sarah and Adam's death. The memory gave Buck good cause for worry because Chris's self-destructive course had cost them their friendship.
They were friends still, but not the way they were as young men. What Chris shared with Vin Tanner was closer to what he and Buck once shared compared to the pale remnants between them. Buck accepted the loss, knowing there had to be sacrifices to save Chris from himself. What is it? Chris's tone clearly indicated he did not like the intrusion.
I just got a call from the surface,
Buck said, ignoring the data pads across the desk. Chris continued to stare into the stars outside his window. So? Buck shrugged uncomfortably, convinced something was terribly wrong but uncertain how to approach Chris. When they were friends, they could be frank with each other, but now, with Chris as his captain, the situation was more complicated. While there was some informality in their manner towards each other, Buck was painfully aware of the line he could not cross. Buck cleared his throat and considered how to respond before deciding the mission was too important for him to mince words.
You were expected on the planet an hour ago.
Chris blinked and swiveled around in his chair. Damn. He swore under his breath as he noted the time on the chronometer at the corner of his desk and realized Buck was right. Chris sat up immediately. Why didn't you tell me?
I didn't think I had to remind you. You're usually quite reliable about these things.
I am still reliable. Chris growled and began gathering the data pads into some sort of order.
Chris.
Buck took a deep breath and plunged into a world of trouble because he didn't know what else to do. Something was clearly bothering Chris ever since they returned to the Maverick.
I've never known you to be late for anything. You know better than I do how important these meetings on Antaria are. Mary's furious you're not there already. We've known each other for too long to play games. Talk to me. What's going on?
Chris let out a guilty breath and decided Buck, of all people, would understand what he was going through. Before he sent us back, Q told me he was giving me a little gift for being so kind to his son. Buck missed the content of the conversation between the two, but he recalled they exchanged words before the crews returned to the Maverick.
What was this gift?
Chris swallowed the lump in his throat. He said the Magellan's destruction wasn't an accident. Adam and Sarah were murdered. The light of understanding flooded Buck's eyes.
Jesus. Chris, you can't possibly believe he's telling the truth.
He said it was a gift. Why would he lie about something like that?
Why not?
Buck countered just as sharply.
Look at you. You've had this idea in your head for less than a day, and look at how it's affecting you. He's playing with you, Chris.
I don't think he is. What if it's true, Buck? What if the shuttle accident wasn't an accident?
Who would want to kill Sarah and Adam, Chris?
Buck retaliated, terrified by how much the idea had already taken root in his captain's head. I don't know, but I've been reviewing the reports. He gestured to the data pads before him. I found something.
What?
Buck asked, not really believing it, more inclined to think this was just an extension of a sick game Q was playing with Chris's mind. After they died, Chris swallowed hard, needing desperately to convince someone so he would not feel like he was going insane. I didn't look at these reports. I didn't see any point in it. You remember what I was like back then? Buck remembered, and his memory of those events heightened his concern for Chris now.
I remember.
Well, according to this, he handed Buck the data pad, which the first officer took reluctantly. There was an unexplained energy spike before the crash. They don't know what caused it, but since it was not the primary cause of the explosion, they didn't investigate further. As we know, the plasma seals breached, and the containment shield around the antimatter dropped prematurely. Buck studied the report, and although the spike was mentioned, the engineer who did the investigation chose not to pursue it when the cause of the accident was apparent. However, there was just enough ambiguity to fuel Chris's suspicion the accident resulted from foul play.
It says here it might have just been a defective power chip. It's not uncommon and relatively harmless, certainly not enough to cause an antimatter breach.
But what if it did? What if someone caused the spike and created the breach?
Chris, let it go.
Chris stared at Buck as if he was insane. How can you ask me to do that?
Because I'm your friend. They're dead, Chris. Nothing can bring them back. Q may have been able to snap his fingers to resurrect Julia, but that won't happen with Sarah and Adam. They're gone. I miss them too, and more than anything, I wish they were here for you, but this will hurt you more than you know.
Buck pleaded, but the revulsion in Chris's eyes at the thought of giving up told Buck he failed. Chris stared at him with an expression of ice. If they were murdered, if someone took them from me, I will tear this universe apart to find out by whom. I will not stop until I find the truth. And with that, Buck knew there was nothing more to say. Although Lilith King was still sick in bed and his mother was no longer on board the Maverick, Billy Travis did not feel neglected or alone. He thought the senior staff would be mad at him because of what he and Quinn put them through, but they were pretty understanding even though the captain seemed a little preoccupied. Billy spent some time with Vin and Alex today horseback riding, which was infinitely more pleasing to the science officer than the Magnificent Seven simulation. Still, Billy missed the company of his new friend, despite all the trouble they got into. Besides, Quinn had really neat parents. As Billy understood it, Quinn was the first child born to the Q Continuum. Before Quinn, the Q simply existed. His birth reminded the Continuum they were a part of the cycle of creation like the rest of the universe. Of course, death was purely a matter of choice with the Q still. Some members of the Q desired it after they had experienced everything there was to experience. Billy could not truly comprehend what the Q considered to be everything, but he assumed it was a lot. Billy made his way to Holodeck 2, where he would have his next lesson on surfing, courtesy of Lieutenant Rain, who was so much fun to be around. He couldn't believe she was an adult sometimes. Lilith called Rain really cool. As for surfing, Billy could not imagine how valuable the skill would be, but he liked the water, unaware most Vulcans disliked water sports because Vulcans had very little surface moisture. It was another failing his paternal grandparents would point out when they saw him again.
Whoa.
Billy heard a voice beside him as he walked along the corridor towards Holodeck 2.
Quinn. I thought you might want to play.
Quinn asked hopefully.
Sure, your mom won't mind?
No.
Quinn shook his head.
My dad said he'd take care of it.
What about yours? Is she still mad? No.
The Vulcan shook his head in answer.
She's down on the planet talking to the Antarians.
Do you want to go visit her? I've never been to Antaria.
You can do that?
Billy was still coming to grips with just how powerful his friend was.
Yeah, I can. Do you want to go?
Better not.
Billy said quickly before Quinn took them to Antaria. He doubted it would impress his mother at his sudden appearance at her conference meeting with the delegates.
She's working. If we show up, she'll be upset.
Oh.
Quinn said, crestfallen, still coming to grips with this notion of rules of conduct in interacting with humans. However, he liked Billy, so he would try remembering his father's instructions.
Hey.
Billy came up with an idea and looked at Quinn with a smile.
Ever been surfing?
The end. Thank you for listening.